I'm your host, Ann Petros with America's Credit Unions, and today I am joined by two great speakers. We've got Meredith Fuchs, General Counsel at Plaid, and Ben Maxim, Chief Digital Strategy and Information Officer at Michigan State University Federal Credit Union. Meredith and Ben are both experts on the use of technology in financial services and are both spending a lot of time thinking about the CFPB's new proposed rule on open banking to implement Section 1033 of the Dodd-Frank Act. So that will be our topic of discussion today. Meredith, Ben, thank you so much for both joining me.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Excellent. All right. Well, we've got a lot to get through, so let's get into it. Meredith, I'd like to start with you, and let's talk a little bit about your role at Plaid and, you know, to what extent you're involved in partnership relationships with financial institutions like credit unions.
Sure. So I am Plaid's general counsel. I lead the legal, privacy, and compliance function. But I should mention that before I came to Plaid, which is a technology infrastructure company, I worked at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau as part of the startup team. And I was its general counsel and deputy director. And then I went to Capital One before coming to Plaid. So I have a kind of pretty well-rounded experience in financial services. And the way we work with financial institutions is to really help them set up the ability to share their data when consumers demand it. So we're working to help them set up API access and to integrate with various fintech applications that, that their customers want to use.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right. And Ben, could you, you know, please describe MSU FCU's decision to build an API with Plaid? I hear it's been a few years now since y'all did that.
Yeah, absolutely. So as Meredith mentioned, you know, we have members who are using all these different technologies, and Plaid enables a lot of the connections and pulling the accounts over. So we've had a history of kind of supporting open banking and these APIs before it was probably even called open banking, you know, with our members using Mint or Quicken or different services throughout the years. And we've always kind of coded to wherever our kind of members want us to be. And we, a few summers ago, had a bunch of members who were trying to use Coinbase and Robinhood, and Acorns, and some of the others as, you know, the craze of this kind of investing, you know, was kind of taking off in those channels. And we had members calling us, you know, angry that, you know, these different apps were putting up, hey, contact your financial institution, we can't connect your account. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're like, okay, let's look into this. And we started discussions with Plaid because we found out that all three of those services were using Plaid to make the connections. And we, you know, happened to stumble upon the Plaid Exchange team that was just starting to offer, you know, kind of this free access for credit unions to connect via API versus the traditional screen scraping connections, which weren't working for those services and would allow the money to move, which is really what was being blocked. So, you know, we had, you know, I think it was 75 people called our call center that August. I think it was August of 2020, I think is when we got started. And they all were trying to do different things. And we were like, hey, we need to figure this out. So, you know, we spun up a team to investigate it. You know, we thought we were going to have to do a lot more work than we, you know, figured out that Plaid had this cool connection ability. And we jumped at the chance to kind of help them, you know, get into credit unions and really help, you know, kind of pioneer that space as well.
That's fantastic. Now, did you encounter any challenges in that process? Sounds like it was pretty straightforward and smooth overall.
Yeah, I mean, so we've had a pretty robust development team for a long time. And before I was in this role, I was a developer at the credit union and then also leading our dev team. So we built our own online banking. We had a lot of APIs in place for other things that we were kind of able to repurpose. But, you know, to actually set it up, you know, the actual connecting is the easy part. You know, some of the longer part is, you know, making sure the security team's on board, the legal team's on board, the compliance is on board. And some of what we did to kind of help with that, and now, you know, fast forward to now, if you say, hey, this app connects via Plaid, everyone's excited because, like, oh, cool, we know what that means. But they didn't know what that meant, you know, 3-4 years ago. So, you know, some of the advantages that really got those areas on board were talking about how, you know, if we weren't to, you know, first of all these members could go choose another bank account or connect with these apps without us being involved at all. By us supporting Plaid and the Plaid Exchange and doing the direct connection, we're actually more involved in the process than we could be if we were to just kind of leave it out to our members on their own. Our members could potentially just account credential to Plaid. So instead of Plaid having, you know, a tokenized process to maintain access and authentication to all these different solutions, every solution would be maintaining these things, you know, and a lot of them are startups, not as established as Plaid, so their security practices may or may not be as great. And Plaid's very well established, and they have a really robust legal process and compliance process, and that's their whole business. So they have a lot of data protections in place that startups could only dream of being able to afford to put in place. So that also kind of helps sell our kind of IT security team and our risk team to really understand that, hey, credentials are less places, it's more secure, all these calls are now tokenized. You know, members would be putting their passwords and all these other things that would be way more vulnerable if they weren't using the Plaid exchange.
Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those security considerations, I'm sure, are huge. And this whole process as you're evaluating, you know, how to integrate your systems. What's your advice to other credit unions considering doing the same thing or, you know, building an API generally, especially maybe, you know, smaller institutions that don't really have a lot of APIs or any at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So something I've been kind of advocating for in the industry to anyone who will listen is, you know, there's a lot of partners we all have. There's, you know, the digital banking providers, the core system providers, and they all have done better with it, but they're all, they need to be the ones to really help, especially the smaller credit unions, just provide access, you know, to Plaid, to the other aggregators. You know, Plaid's one of many, and although it's the most popular, there are other services out there as well. So supporting open banking generally is where we should all try to be, especially with some of the regulations and rules that are starting to come out where we do need to, you know, they're trying to do away with screen scraping, so we have to support the API version. So, you know, at some point, we're all going to be forced to do it. So if our partners that we already have established can help us, even better. Those of us who have tech resources, you can do API development. That's what most tech development has become in the last 10 years anyway, is how do you stitch together APIs to create an experience. So, you know, anyone who has a dev team, this should be a very easy experience to be able to make the connection. You know, help educate your legal and compliance and risk teams along the way. That way they're not coming back and slowing you down later. Say, hey, we want to do this and this is why it's good. And then go through the process. That way it's not, hey, we did all this cool exploration, we have all these plans, and then, well, hang on, what are you trying to do? You know, it can be where you end up. So make sure you involve compliance, legal, risk in your process. They're always involved in anything we're doing, FinTech partnership, you know, and now we're to the point where kind of this, like, you know, culture of innovation across the board, including in, you know, compliance, because we've figured out how to mitigate the risk, and open banking is a way to mitigate risk and control where your data is flowing in and out. And by moving to these API-driven channels, you're permissioning people, your members, and then also what apps can actually use and connect to your data. So one of the things that we haven't talked about yet, so the Plaid Exchange provides the ability for both us as an institution, but also for members to be able to shut off access to certain apps as well. So let's say we read the news tomorrow, and, you know, I'm not going to name a fintech because that would be wrong, but fintech XYZ, you know, had a data breach. Well, we can tomorrow shut off, or today, whenever we read that news, shut off access to that one specifically, but leave access to the other, you know, 6,000 plus apps that are out there. You know, so we have better able to manage that data. So I think, again, the hard part for a lot of credit unions is getting on board with kind of the compliance side. You know, regulators are telling us, hey, you should do this because it's better. This is already happening. People are screen scraping, giving their password to everybody. This actually makes it a better process. And if you have tech resources, they know how to do this work. If you don't, there are a lot of companies out there that can help you. And hopefully our, you know, system partners are also helping us as well.
I'd love to jump in because, I mean, Ben is a great advocate for this being the future. But what I would say to companies that have not already started to implement these kinds of things and haven't accepted that this is the future, it really is just unavoidable at this point. I mean, I know sometimes institutions worry about implementing new technology and they get frustrated when a regulator insists they have to go forward and do something new that may cost money or compliance resources, I don't think this is avoidable. And it's not just a regulatory question. It's also just, what do your customers want? And, you know, I'm sure Ben will be able to tell you the story about how they were able to hold on to customers that might have left when they left school and no longer were in the region of the university, mm-hmm. but they stuck with the credit union because it offered these services. So part of this is, what do your customers want? Can you hold on to your customers so that you're competitive? But the other thing is that it's going to open up new opportunities for new business lines for these credit unions as well. And so I would start from the business perspective and say, what do we need to do for the future? And then start asking yourself, what does that mean? And then you can engage with your trade associations, et cetera, and tell the CFPB, here's what it's going to take to implement, so that the ultimate rule that comes out is going to be the most effective and useful for the industry.
Right. Well, we're definitely going to work on submitting some comments to the CFPB, and we'll get into your thoughts on the proposal in just a minute. But just wanted to add that member retention piece is definitely important, but it's also critical to think about attracting new members, especially the youngest and younger generations in the future, because they are very tech savvy. They do virtually all of their banking online. And so without these sorts of technology tools in place, you're really not going to be able to provide the services and access that they demand. And having the portability of data so straightforward, I think it's really important for a lot of younger consumers.
Yeah, maybe just to comment on that specifically, we have a lot of our student members who are telling us, so why do I need a bank account? I got Cash App, I got Venmo, mm-hmm. They gave me a debit card.
They're not insured.
Why do I even need a credit union account? So the stuff that happened earlier this year with some of the bank failures did draw attention to the fact that there is this thing about deposit insurance. So that does help a little bit. In the background of all those services to move money around is still Plaid. So if you want to play in those spaces and you want to support people, because they're still going to use Venmo, even though they have an account with you, or Cash App seems to be the more popular one with students these days, at least in our area. You have the account, but you have to be able to facilitate the connection. Otherwise, that money is not going to flow, and then they're going to move to somewhere where it will. Mm-hmm. And that is one thing I didn't mention. Those 75 people that called our call center that summer and that month of August all told us they were going to leave if we didn't offer these services and move their accounts elsewhere. So, it's retention, and then it's also the ability to attract and say, hey, we have all the same services that a Chase, a Capital One, a lot of the super regionals get a lot of the accounts in our area, like Huntington mm-hmm. and PNC, and they have a lot more resources to do this work or pay for this work to be done. So in order for us to compete, we're not competing with credit unions against credit unions. We're really competing with all financial services and also all these tech companies. So to be able to attract people to us and actually choose us over even a Chime, we have to these connections to really support where they want to be doing business.
Absolutely. All right. Well, on the actual rule itself, this is a question for both of you. What are your initial thoughts on the proposed Section 1033 rulemaking?
I'm happy to jump in. I mean, generally, we think it's a very positive proposal from the CFPB. It makes clear that the data belongs to consumers, to your members, and because it's their own financial data, and it empowers them to use it the way they want to and need to for their own personal needs. And we think that's really exciting. And I think it's very consistent with sort of the credit union mission that the members are able to control their own financial data. I think there's a few things that we are concerned about. And, I mentioned this earlier, that it's really important for institutions that have not already implemented APIs to take a look at what it would involve and give good feedback to the CFPB so that the implementation process is going to be a smooth one. Mm-hmm. We've actually really committed to trying to help institutions do this. For the largest banks and financial institutions, we have worked on individual APIs that they've built, but we also offer Core Exchange, which is a free template API model that smaller institutions can implement without too much trouble. That's similar to what Ben described to us already. And then many of the core providers and other platforms are providing these APIs as well. And we've partnered with many of them to make it available to thousands of institutions. So I think that implementation is going to be possible. And now the question is for the various institutions to take a look at, like, what's the rule going to require and how's it going to help their customers?
Mm-hmm. Ben, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think overall it is positive. And I think a lot of what we focus on is, you know, the credit union sharing data out, but there's the ability then to bring the data back in, and all this account aggregation that's been talked about and all the things you could realize from having all the data from everywhere your members have their money, and give them an opportunity to maybe make you the institution of choice by seeing it all in one place. And that can all come in the other way as well. And we've started to do that. One solution that we use with Plaid at our credit union is account verification for funding new member accounts, and then also for external transfers as well, to validate, you know, instead of, you know, hoping for the best or having someone manually go look at those or doing the trial deposit process, we're able to connect, you know, to people's other accounts and bring, you know, a funding account, whatever, over from, you know, a Chase, Wells Fargo, wherever, because they're all connected. And, you know, so very positive in that sense, you know, beyond just how do we get our data in there and play the game, you're also able to then receive a benefit the other way if you want to take it to the next level.
Yeah, I think that's a great example, Ben. And it was one of the things I wanted to mention as well, is that when consumer data portability first started to be a thing, folks thought about data flowing from financial institutions outside of the financial perimeter. But that's not the only way that data flows. Data can flow in all different directions. So if you have members who are leaving the area or switching jobs, and they might port their account over elsewhere, you now have much more of an ability to compete with other institutions to retain those members and to bring in other members, because you can get a much better picture of your members' financial life through this rule and through data portability. And I think that's a really exciting thing that wasn't really appreciated early on, that it's a true business opportunity for institutions that want to really think about how to serve their members.
And maybe more to the actual rule itself in my response too, is, you know, this has happened in Europe. It's going state by state right now. So, you know, do we want to have 50 different states to figure out, or do we want to have one, you know, kind of federal level kind of rule to follow and guidance? And I think we would all agree that following one rule is a lot better than following 50 different ones and trying to figure out, well, does my member actually live in California? Do they actually reside in Michigan and just happen to go to school there, or whatever the case may be, where people are traveling all over? Like, it makes it a bit of a nightmare to try to comply when there's different rules, different places.
Oh yeah, I think nightmare is the right word. That we would all definitely prefer a federal standard. And this was a part of Dodd-Frank, so it's inevitable. This has to be implemented sooner or later. It's just a matter of, you know, what the contours of the rule and requirements actually look like. But you know, it sounds like you're both in agreement that this is, you know, an appropriate step, the right path forward. It's not too idealistic of an idea to set into motion.
Well, I don't think you can avoid it when it's what consumers want. Mm-hmm. I mean, realistically, we know folks are getting technology and digital services everywhere else in their life, and so they really want it in financial services as well. So I think it's kind of the consumer wave that's pushing it. And I don't think that CFPB goes too far with this proposal, because really what they do with this proposal is establish basic rules of the road. Mm-hmm. And I think those will help make this much more of a reality and make it clearer for institutions like what they have to do to comply. So I think in that sense, it's a pretty good first step. But I do think it's actually just a first step, and CFPB will be doing additional rulemakings to kind of refine this over time and to expand it to cover more diverse types of data over time.
Oh, sure. Because this, I mean, is ever evolving, right? There's always going to be new technologies and new ways of integrating data, I'm sure. And so as that changes, the rule will have to adjust as well. Mm-hmm. Ben, you know, are there areas of improvement in your perspective that could make the process more fluid for financial institutions as they share their data with third parties?
Yeah, maybe the one thing that comes up, and it's not unique to Plaid, it's in all the kind of open banking technologies, is the ability to stay linked. And there's this process where, again, it's it's part of the kind of the security protocol behind it, you know, and, you know, there may need to be some technology innovation to allow it to kind of continue and improve. But, you know, the consumer needs to, there's not really a set it and forget it linking that can happen and you just leave it open. Because if you were to do that as an institution, you know, that person never changed, everything is always connected. They forget about this app they signed up for 3 years ago and it's still connected, pulling in data. Well, you know, you probably don't want that automatically connecting every time for 3 years without them knowing it's still there. So there's kind of a balance to it. But maybe the piece to solve is how do you better improve the linking process and keep it linked. So, you know, you're using an app, all of a sudden 3 months later, it shuts down because we had to set a token expiration, you know. But a lot of the apps that have done it well, and it's really more down to the fintechs that are doing it versus the financial institution, the fintechs need to create as part of their workflow, you know, hey, as a security thing, we just needed to re-authenticate. This happens if you've connected your TV, your smart streaming devices, Rokus and Apple TVs and stuff to Xfinity or whatever, pick a streaming like cable channel where you authenticated based on your cable provider. You have to relink that every so often if there hasn't been activity or whatever. So it's the same process and we just accept it and do it on the streaming device, but all of a sudden when your account unlinks from a fintech app, everyone's like, oh, I'm not using that fintech app anymore. It's like, well, why can't we do that? So we also have a subsidiary. We've built some fintechs as well. And as we've kind of consumed as the fintech, we kind of learned that, hey, let's not make this a red alarm. Like, hey, your account's unlinked with red letters. Let's just make it part of the onboarding workflow. So anyone who's a fintech doing this, if you can kind of help on your side, you know, make sure people know the process of linking and why it's there, I think that helps. But I think ultimately that's the thing that's kind of holding back this in general, across the board, not unique to Plaid, but kind of the whole kind of concept of open banking APIs, this permissioning between the institution, the aggregator, and then the fintech in the end, and making sure that those accounts can stay flowing and you don't have to kind of always re-authenticate in this kind of very frictionful way. Is there a better way to do it with less friction? Are you just showing your face to your phone every so often and then it's good, or what is it? You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be a massive thing, but you know, that's probably the biggest challenge to overcome in today's kind of form of what we're doing.
Well, and I'm sure you can imagine, you know, there's a balance between adding friction and reducing friction. And one of the things we've tried to do at Plaid is to build tools so the consumer can always be aware of what accounts they've linked. And they have the ability to go into, we call it the consumer portal, and they can unlink accounts if they want to, and they can ask us to delete their data if they'd like to. So giving control back to consumers is part of the way companies like Plaid have approached it, and I think it is what the CFPB wants as well. And so my hope is that once this rule is finalized, it'll make things like Ben is describing, the linking, the unlinking, a lot more standardized. And once it becomes more standardized, consumers will know what to expect and it won't be confusing. Mm-hmm. And then institutions will adapt to that.
Right. The more institutions that you have, you know, engaging in this process, the more common it just becomes that, oh, this is normal. You know, this is a part of the maintenance, if you will, right, of this relationship. And you just have to reauthenticate and, you know, and that's simple, but not a scary prospect or confusing, right? Because it's clear from the start that this is just part of it.
Just what you do. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Maybe one thing to just highlight there, the rule does eliminate screen scraping, and usually the linking breaks when the institution is connecting to changes something. So it doesn't know where to look for the data anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's when it gets hard. So, you know, instead of looking and guessing where the account balance is in the API, it just knows. And no matter what you do to your kind of visual interface to your members, it will always know that the account balance is this because it's in the same place. So it's a lot easier for Plaid to be able to get that data when you go through the API. So the rule will help improve this across the board. So,
So Meredith, question for you. We talked a little bit about data security earlier. So I'd love to hear from you, you know, what role Plaid might play as an intermediary in terms of helping credit unions vet third parties when it comes to important, you know, things like data security.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, under the proposed rule, it would put obligation on institutions that are going to let companies, fintechs, et cetera, connect to their API. And it's very difficult, you can imagine, for a financial institution to deal with all the hundreds or thousands of fintechs that may be out there. So our hope is that we're going to be able to make that process easier by ourselves doing that vetting and communicating the information that a financial institution needs to know from the fintech directly to the financial institution, you know, in a way that's documented and auditable so that they can meet their compliance obligations. We are hoping that some of the expectations get spelled out in a little bit more precision in the rule when it's finalized so that the whole industry can just kind of rely on a standard. That would be ideal, and it's something that we're really looking for when the rule gets finalized. Right now, the rule references kind of a qualified industry standard, but that doesn't yet exist. Right. And so it's one of those things where, frankly, financial institutions, companies like Plaid and fintechs need to come together to help define that standard.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it'll take a while for those, you know, standards to be finalized, and what does that look like going forward? I mean, can standards change? Does that lead to more confusion? How is it all going to work?
Well, there are some organizations like the Financial Data Exchange that we participate in and many financial institutions participate in that are trying to develop some of these standards. And I think some of these organizations will present themselves to CFPB as self-governing bodies for the industry. So that still has to be worked out. And I don't think it's going to be resolved quickly. But I think that as the rule gets finalized and everyone in the industry understands that consumer access to data is needed and that solving this question about who can connect, how long they can connect, and what they connect for, once that becomes clear that that really is required, it's going to push everyone in the industry to cooperate and try to solve these questions. And again, because Plaid is kind of in the middle of, you know, the thousands of institutions on one side and the thousands of fintechs and other businesses on the other side, we're in a very good position to manage that for institutions so that they can get the information they need for their own compliance with the rule. So I think that's one of the things we're excited that we're going to be able to offer. I'm already today, we've built products to do things like identity verification and to try to help prevent fraud in transactions. So it's like yet another offering that we can add on top of the specific connectivity that we currently offer.
Great. Yeah, I know there's a lot of concern about fraud and, you know, again, data security. So that's top of mind for a lot of our members. So that's good to hear. I have another question for you, Meredith. The CFPB assumes that charging a fee for the right of third parties to access data is unreasonable. In terms of, you know, a mechanism for recouping costs. Do you agree with the CFPB's perspective?
Well, the CFPB's perspective comes from the idea that it is a fundamental right for people to get access to and own and be able to use their own data the way they want. And so that's what's behind, I think, the CFPB proposal that there should be no fee to access your own data. And in fact, you know, many institutions have set up consumer interfaces, you know, your online banking portal, where they don't charge anything and they allow consumers to engage with their accounts and do transactions. So I think the CFPB is kind of trying to take that model and shift it into this area where data would be shared with third parties, you know, through intermediaries and the like. I think what we've been really focused on is how do you keep the costs low for institutions that have to build APIs? Mm-hmm. And by the way, we jumped right into discussing APIs without explaining why it's so important. So I just want to take a second and make sure everyone's starting from the same page. Today, the way a lot of fintechs would access a consumer's data at a financial institution would be because the consumer shares their credentials and then the fintech or an intermediary like Plaid is able to go in and pull the needed data. When we use these APIs, it gets rid of credential sharing and it also enables a lot more control over what data is being shared. And so that's why it's a much more secure and a much more reliable way of connecting. So what we've been really focused on is how do you reduce the cost of setting up that API? And through things like the platform organizations that we've made partnerships with, the core providers, you know, Fiserv, Alchemy, Jack Henry, Finastra, all of these companies are ones that we work with so that we can help make it available for institutions to get up and running on a secure data exchange very quickly.
Ben, do you have any thoughts on the cost element?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, so financial institutions, you know, offer free digital banking today, right? So, but we also pay, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars a year to offer that for free. So, you know, it's not a free service for anyone, and someone needs to, you know, there are companies that provide that, they're not charged, you know, so I think, you know, accessing the data to the end consumer is what's important. That should be free. But, you know, the companies that want to build a whole business model off of getting free data, I don't know if that necessarily is the way to do it. I think there should be some level of ability for a company like Plaid to be able to continue to build and keep our data secure by having some income stream coming into them. You know, I think we could look almost at utilities, if you will, as maybe a model where, you know, there are companies that provide energy to all of our houses, but it's not all given to us all for free, you know, but that's just kind of how it works. There are companies that are in the middle that help move that electricity from power plant to our homes. That's okay to charge, and there is some government regulation there, you know, but it's not, you know, anyone can have power for free because, you know, that's great. That's not how it operates in many other industries. So I think, you know, I think they're looking at a small slice of how it works and what goes into actually delivering this stuff. And, you know, digital banking from financial institutions, we have to be there. We have to pay those millions of dollars to even get people to come join us. So we're willing to pay that money. You know, if a fintech wants to spin up a program, they're also willing to pay the money to get the access to the data. Mm-hmm. You know, if they want to have a premium offering and charge that to the consumer, but there should be some level to be able to get that data out. And that's okay. And that's what they're asking the financial institutions to do, is be able to provide that data anywhere you want it to go. But if a company wants to make a bunch of money off of that, well, that's between them and, you know, their customers, you know, to figure out. So if they are choosing it, again, we're in a capitalist society. If they choose to pay for it, they should be allowed to choose to pay for it, and people should be allowed to charge for it. But that's my own opinion, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a cost associated with, you know, just providing obviously products and services to consumers on the financial institution side, and then protecting the integrity of that data on your end. And as soon as it's out the door, I mean, you only have so much control over what happens to that data. But then ultimately, you know, if their financial data is compromised, a consumer is probably going to turn to their financial institution first and say, hey, what happened?
Right.
So that's kind of the challenging part.
One of the reasons why I really encourage institutions to talk to their core providers or to these platform providers is because, you know, those entities and companies like Plaid that make this connectivity possible are really working hard to try to make it feasible and secure. Mm-hmm. And so by having those discussions, we can identify where there could be gaps, and we can identify where the burdens might be unreasonable. And that's the thing we need to then communicate to the CFPB so that the rule will be a good one that is implementable. But I think that's kind of like the thing I would love people to take away is, like, think about the practical reality here so that we can make practical comments and make it work. Because everyone in the entire industry has an interest in it being reliable service for consumers and also having safety and security. And we want to flow that through from the financial institutions all the way through to other businesses that may be using consumer data.
Absolutely. Well, on the topic of practicality, Ben, I'd love to hear from you, you know, just exactly how much work you think is going to be involved for your credit union in bringing together, you know, different categories of covered data, like bill pay information or fee schedules, and making that compatible for API export. And now, you know, I'm asking you this question, obviously, with, you know, the understanding that you all are a little more advanced in this process than a lot of credit unions.
Yeah. So again, anyone who has a dev tech resource, you know, group team person at their company, being able to create the APIs, the easy part, organizing the data, is sometimes the challenging part, depending where it lives at the institution, right? So credit unions sometimes have older systems, they have disparate systems. Sometimes something's just in an Excel sheet somewhere. So you just got to get stuff so it's accessible somewhere so that you can put it into this API. You know, I think a lot of people moving towards the cloud and a lot of the different services makes this easier because then everything's already internet enabled, which means we can access it all via these APIs, which are just the translation layer between systems. And, you know, rate schedules and all that, you just got to put it in a database somewhere. Again, very easy. I do think our core providers, our digital banking providers, will step in and help us do all this stuff. So again, if these become rules, they're going to be wanting to do this. Otherwise, the first one that does it, we're all going to jump ship to that one. It's hard to switch core providers, so there's probably some of us who will stay regardless. But, you know, if it goes on long enough and they don't all go kind of go down this path together, there will be a winner in that space. And right now, we kind of choose based on other criteria at the moment. But it is very challenging to switch core providers, so a lot of us don't want to take on that, you know, 2 or 3 year project to do so. And we probably wouldn't in this case, as long as they all kind of get there for us, you know, as well. And I think that's probably the best opportunity for the credit union industry to make this happen. But those who want to jump on early, we have been looking at the FDX stuff ourselves. So Meredith brought that up. You know, that before the government got involved, it was really trying to be a market-driven standardization that was happening. And I think, you know, that was an advantage the U.S. had here. Hopefully the government sees that as a model, can strengthen it versus, you know, take it over. And I think really by doing that, you know, you have something you could look at today to kind of see where we're going. And you don't have to wait for all the rules to be made to make sure you're kind of in that right space today.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, especially for smaller credit unions, I do think it'll take a good bit of time. And, you know, of course, for those institutions, there's also limited bargaining power, if you will, with core providers and others. And so it may be a bit challenging to get exactly what you need to make the switch quickly and, you know, with the lowest cost and burden overall. But slowly and surely, yeah, maybe, I'm sure we'll get there.
Maybe to respond to that specifically, I think, you know, it'll be the same process for a larger institution or a smaller one. So if they have to do it for the larger ones, you know, help them figure it out. It should be able to be something they can then resell to any size credit union. You know, it's if it's standardized like it's supposed to be, it should be truly standard and it doesn't matter. It's just how do you map it in like we do for LOSs and everything else in between. So,
yeah, and I would just add, I mean, ultimately, I think one of the incredible powers of this open banking rule that CFPB is putting out is extending access to financial services to everyone who wants to get involved in the financial system and wants to get access to products and services, which again is so consistent with what credit unions do because they reach members, you know, in every part of the country, every industry, you know, every sort of segment. So I think that there's an opportunity to think about this as a real positive for your members and for, you know, consumers more broadly. And if you kind of think about it that way, and you think about the business opportunity, you think about the member service opportunity, that will get you right to like, what do we need to make this work? And, you know, it's really important to have those voices from credit unions heard because, you know, as you can imagine, there's like large financial institutions that have been working on this for a long time. They've already built their APIs, but the companies that have not done that yet, we need to hear what they have to say.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what I was getting at is, you know, not necessarily that we won't have a standard at some point. I mean, that should happen, but that it's going to take time, and especially for the smallest institutions, they have more hurdles to jump through to get to a place where, you know, they're able to offer the same sort of data portability and, you know, integrate into data aggregators seamlessly. So we'll get there.
Sure. I mean, the MSU Federal Credit Union is a great case study that it is possible. So congratulations, Ben, on that. And there's a lot of other credit unions that we've worked with that also have shown that they can do this. You know, WeQ is one and Viridian Credit Union, Credit Union of Texas. I mean, all of these entities have actually made this work. And so I also feel like as you sort of talk to your peer entities, you're going to find that this is something that you can do and that it has great positive outcomes, as you know, Ben's already described. I mean, I think the ability to like hold on to your members as their life changes is a remarkable thing.
Yeah.
Especially since so much of what the credit unions are about is like building that community. And so you get to keep that community.
Yes. Yes, that's very important. And you know, we spoke earlier, Meredith, about the topic of the, you know, qualified industry standard for data exchange purposes. Are you confident that that will be in place, you know, before the finalization of this rule, or it's just going to take a little bit of time after the fact? And then, you know, maybe some adjustments will need to be made to the rule to kind of incorporate maybe what those standards look like once they're finalized.
I mean, I think it'll take a little bit of time. I don't think that all of that is going to be done by the time the rule is done. What's great about the way CFPB typically implements rules is it has a time period for institutions of different sizes to get into compliance. And so there will be time for the industry to develop more details before everyone has to get into compliance. But again, that's the reason why I really think it's important for institutions to be thinking about this now and telling CFPB how much time they're going to need in order to stand up an API.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that phased implementation and compliance deadlines is certainly helpful. The more time, the better for the smallest institutions to sort through it all and figure out a plan. All right, so big picture, you know, what impact will the CFPB's rule have in the long term when it comes to the value of data within the financial ecosystem? I'd love to hear from both of you.
Well, I'm happy to go first. I think that it potentially makes the data much more valuable because for institutions that have members but don't see the members' entire financial picture, you're going to be in a position to now offer more services, to learn more about those customers, and to work with them to kind of take care of their entire financial lives. Now, there could be some more competition because others are going to be vying for their attention as well. But if you're providing great member services, then they're going to want to be with you. So I think that it's an exciting opportunity. And I think the institutions that kind of grab it are going to end up doing really very well in the future.
Yeah, and just to kind of extend, I think it becomes more valuable. It does increase competition, perhaps, and competition and that attention. But really, you know, it's also hard to move your checking account, your direct deposit. You know, it's not easy to change these things. So you have some inherent things keeping people with you in the first place. But if you don't offer those are going to be the catalysts that get them to actually take the effort to move. So you do need to get there at some point or let them know how you're getting there or you're going to be there eventually, and maybe they'll wait it out. You know, I think that's as important as doing it is communicating to your members your intentions. And you know, if you let them know it's coming, they're probably like, okay, I can wait. You know, I don't need this tomorrow. So I think that also is, you know, a good way, especially for credit unions that are going to take a little bit of time to figure it out and need the time to figure it out. That's an opportunity to maybe communicate that you are trying to figure it out and give them the opportunity to understand how they benefit. And a lot of that member communication can kind of help in the interim, you know, as we kind of figure out how we're all going to get there in the end. But yeah, data becomes way more valuable, but then you're also able to receive data as well. And this is all, open banking is meant to be a two-way street. It's quite often banks, credit unions, you should share your data. Consumers should get the data and fintechs can do what they want with it. Well, actually it should be a kind of everyone gets to see and do and share and give. And then hopefully all benefit from the ecosystem.
Hopefully. But yes, that point about, you know, communicating with your members is really critical, right? Because everyone just wants to know what's going to happen and what your plans are, even if it's not happening immediately, that communication provides a sense of comfort and understanding. So everyone's on the same page. All right. Well, any other thoughts for our viewers and listeners before we close out?
I guess I would just say, you know, all of this is coming down the road and it can be a very positive and exciting thing. And so I do hope that all of these great institutions that are reaching people across the country will embrace it and help companies like ours and help the fintech world just be better so that your members and consumers have really great services. I mean, it's kind of, we need the regulators, but we also need the businesses to participate.
Yep. And then I'll just close with, you know, the consumers are moving us this direction. It's not something that we all chose to do necessarily. But the consumers have said, hey, this is how I want to interact with my money. So it really is time to embrace it and, you know, get ahead of it if you can. And if not, you know, it may be forced upon you at some point, not by regulators necessarily, but really by your members, you know, and we found that, you know, early on that they were willing to tell us they were going somewhere else if we didn't support what they were trying to do. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Ben, Meredith, so much. I've learned a lot from this discussion, and I hope our viewers and listeners did as well. So thanks again, and until next time.